So welcome. Today is going to be a little bit unusual in that I am going to ask all of you if hopefully you have some paper and a pen nearby, and or I suppose you could type it on a device, but I'm going to give you a little, not a quiz, but a little question, a little questionnaire. And mostly just to get you reflecting on your practice, and then we're going to open it up for just an open discussion. Because, as I sit and think about, what I should talk about, it's been very helpful lately when people have been submitting Dharma questions online. There's a little, link on the front page of the website, and there's also a link in the newsletter each week. And so I've been making that the subject of many recent Dharma talks. Otherwise, especially after many years, it does tend to be like, well, if I don't know what is alive for you all, I'm just going to talk about what's alive for me. And that may go, according to my own proclivities and personality, and it may end up getting repetitive. I think a lot about effort and authenticity and what have you, and so I tend to talk about those kinds of things, but then for other people something else may be going on. So I will ask you just a few questions. And just, jot down a few notes. I'm going to give a minute or so to reflect on each one. So the first is, what's one edge of your practice? So when we use that term edge of your practice, we mean, this is the edge of your. Over here, we have what you feel fairly comfortable with that you feel like you understand and have mastered. And then further than that is, more of the unknown or what you are still struggling with, whatever. So where is that edge of growth? Just or, one or two aspects of it or words that might describe it. And I'm sure that amount of time is not going to let you have done something exhaustive, but moving on to the next one. What challenges do you anticipate in your practice with the coming holidays and or over the next few months? And two more. Actually have more than that written down here, but Two more will be enough. How about what's something in the teachings or practices that of Zen and Buddhism, particularly what we you might have learned here or through the podcast, that you just don't get but feel like you should? Some teaching or practice that you just don't get but feel like you should. And then finally, when you consider your practice, however you might define that at this point, the amount of zazen you sit, your involvement with sangha, your mindfulness throughout the day, your work with precepts, what however you might define for yourself your practice, are you satisfied with it in the sense that, obviously there's going to be things that you're still working on and growing, there's an edge to your practice, but you just think like, yeah, if you're able to keep that up over the years, that'll just be great. Or do you have aspirations for your practice, which you have obviously not fulfilled yet, things you would like to see happen in the future, changes you would like to make someday, perhaps, if you get the space and the wherewithal. All right. Hopefully, couple interesting things showed up on your list. I don't think that we, well, mean, we could we could go into little breakout rooms and share with one another our answers to those questions if people were interested. Or we can just kind of open it up to discussion. So, show of hands of those who are visible, breakout groups. Open discussion. It looks like open discussion. All right. Yeah. So how about we just open it up? Did something arise for you as you were writing these things down? We don't have to start with any particular question which you would like us to discuss. You would like to hear my answer to, you would like to hear perhaps some thoughts from other Sangha members on, and hopefully you all know the raise hand function under reactions, which is nice because then you can kind of stack up and I can call on people. Yeah, I mean, you can put stuff in the chat, but I find the chat personally really distracting. I can't pay attention to people in the chat at the same time. But yeah, like if at some point you want to do that, that's fine. John.
Yeah, just real quick. I'm just going to go through your question real quick. On the edge of my practice, basically, retreats, vows, are some of the things I need to do. Koans, I'm sure there's a lot of them I'd love to get into. Monkey mind from the aspect of meditating, there's, a whole progression of monkey mind that I'd like to kind of make my way down. Memorizing the Dharma and applying it, I mean, when you go through your podcast, you have a whole vast array of Dharma that you look up, and really I'd like to do a little bit more formal studying and apply it. So I need to understand the resources and how to look through it myself and do my own, digging up, what did the Buddha say, all that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff. And difficult Dogen passages, and in the next few months, as far as challenges go, I'll have more time, so I really have less challenges coming up than I had in the past. Something I don't get, maybe, certain, koans. I certainly don't know them all yet. And then the depth and breadth of the Dharma materials, and a lot of the sort of metaphoric references used in koans and Dharma study and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of background on that stuff that I probably need to understand a little bit better. So a nice cheat sheet on what all those things are that show up by the moon and ocean and all that kind of stuff. And then, long-term aspirations, I'd like to resolve all of the above. I'd like to get to the point where I can teach it, have many more realizations of myself, a few more enlightenment experiences, and embody the Buddha way. So,
All right then. That
okay.
is an aspiration. So it's funny your the mention about the metaphors and stuff. And I have long similarly dreamed, like, come on, can't we just have a dictionary, just a concordance of all these obscure references, which, some of which are poetic, but some of which actually have a history and an understanding. And I do not know. Sometimes you can find that in the Shambhala Dictionary of Buddhism and Zen, but not often. And yeah, I just recently managed to get my hands on a Soto Shu edition of the Denkaroku, or Transmission of Light, which is the Soto school kind of story of koans and stuff. And it's a huge volume, and then it has a second volume that's even bigger. That's a glossary, and it includes like imagery. So I haven't delved into it yet, but I'm very eager to do so.
Yeah, a good, if there's an online reference library that we all have access to, that'd be a good start. And at some point when I have more time, I'm going to dig through all your materials and references on your Brightway Zen website. But there's a lot of things that probably you don't have online references to. And I don't mind buying and getting a library of stuff and stuff. At some point, I'm going to have more time to study this, and I find it fascinating. So.
Sweet. Thank you for sharing. I think it's Leah next.
And I've unmuted myself. All right, great. Sorry, I'm running around, taking pictures, taking film, staring out all my windows because I'm so enchanted with snow falling and these giant flakes. I'm just like running around. This morning, I went out in it too for a while and just ran around like a crazy person. Anyway, so I love it. So aspirationally, I don't know. There's a lot of things. But one of the things I would like to be able to do is to be able to sit long enough to attend retreats, and even like single day retreats to me seem like mountains, like unattainable mountains that I can't climb. It's hard enough for me, and I don't know why, but it's really hard for me to sit. I sit for short periods, okay, and then when it gets past a certain point, it's like, ah, I'm gonna run screaming, and I just feel like I'm gonna go loopy if I sit for one more second. So that's what happens to me. That's what I would love to be able to do for the new year, New Year's resolutions.
Mm. How do you see, is it a physical restlessness or kind of all of the above kind of restlessness?
Well, I mean, I have monkey mind like everyone, and you know, some sessions are worse than others, but sometimes it's very hard for me to get through just a Sunday. Sometimes it's okay and I can get through 20 minutes or however long it is, and sometimes I'm just like, oh my gosh. So to me, I'm like trying to build up like small, like 5 minutes, and then get to 10 minutes, and then get to 15 minutes, and just keep trying. So I don't know how to make it better. I've been trying this for a while, like years. So any tips?
Yeah. Well, you know, we have in 2023, we have, you know, Zazen Kai and one day retreats and stuff coming up. And it is, you know, encouraged for folks to attend the whole thing if you can, you know, just as like a, you know, a challenge, just I'm going to set aside this whole time, but, you know, part-time participation is possible too. So it's sometimes it's helpful to ahead of time to be like, all right, I'm going to come and I'm going to stay for the afternoon, or, you know, like kind of set, and you can even communicate to me too, like, this is the intention. I'm really going to try to stick it through this particular period of the day and then not have to stay for the whole thing. So yeah, but good luck. I mean, I think that's a great aspiration, because it is, that retreat practice is very valuable, but it is very, very challenging as well. But for anybody who relates to your issue, I mean, I think it's valuable for us to keep in mind that most people in our society, you could not get them to sit for 5 minutes. Most people in our society would just be like, what? You want me to do what? And now what should I do? Like, what? No, you, what are you, what are you, just in silence? Like, no phone, no music, no nothing. You know, and I think that speaks to, like, I don't know if it's natural, it's unnatural, I guess, but this thing about being a human being, that it is difficult to sit still and to just be with what is and all that. So I feel like we should pat ourselves on the back for however much we are able to sit. Thank you.
I'd like to jump in here, don't you?
Yeah, go ahead.
These are good questions. And I've discovered, luckily, in the last 2 weeks, I started going to a new PT team, and they have more of a coach approach rather than medical. And even though, you know, on the card, you know, concentrate in terms of effort of sitting correctly, for my own particular posture, I wasn't sitting in a beneficial way in a straight back chair. And so by addressing that from the direction from the physical therapist, I found out that sitting was far more beneficial, because I wasn't dozing to avoid the pain. Mm. And, you know, it's like, oh, and, you know, even though you put your earlobes over your collarbone and knees over ankles, there was far more that my own body needed to address. And the coach suggested a similar, I use a dining room chair, basic straight back, to put that in front of my knees, so that, you know, it was kind of like a mirror for the body, not for my eyes, to sit straight to the line of the similar chair, if that makes any sense, what I just shared. But these are good questions. And if I can briefly, since I started talking, the first one, the edge, I like to think that a dedication to something is not an obsession, just because words can be traps, but it's a marker in my day. And, you know, even though we all have routines, there can be days that are busier, heavier, and more demanding. And I think, oh my goodness, it's 10:20 p.m. How did I not sit? But it's just like so natural to say, okay, this is the time I have for sitting right now, and this is what I can do today or tonight. And that's just, in a way, kind of precious to me, because I thought, okay, it's part of my day. And for me, a challenge is just change in routine, which can happen, you know, for anybody, not just holiday time. But I'm embarrassed in this sense, the last fourth question. Yes, I'm not satisfied when anger pops up in my screen like a color dye almost for my thinking. And I think that is so unjust that's happening to that group of people. It's nothing new under the sun. And then I kind of buy in to letting that cloud. And the last one, the third question, for me, if I'm having a discussion with some people I've known for the last few years, Buddhist followers, and someone will say, well, I don't believe I have Buddha nature because I'm not the best mother or the whatever. She doesn't elaborate. And I said, oh, but you are. I mean, I think you are. I don't need to. So how, if someone just, how do I represent Buddhism? I mean, just to myself, I don't, no one has to know that it's my practice. But yet, you know, with a Buddhist friend, when someone says, oh, no, I don't think I have Buddha nature yet, but you do. Any rate, if any of that ramble made sense, thank you for these questions.
Thank you, Ruthann. Yeah, well, that last piece about, I'm not sure if I got your question exactly, but like, you know, how to communicate the Dharma to people is like, whew. That's like, even once you feel like you have some grasp of it or some grasp of some part of it, that's the whole area of skillful means, right? We say, we want to cultivate wisdom and compassion and skillful means. So wisdom and then compassion for ourselves and others. So then we want to help others understand, right? And yet that is so, that can be so difficult. People have to be ready to hear. If you say something and it's not the right thing, and I don't sometimes just explaining is not that helpful. And it's just, so that's like lifetimes of, so like that whole model of, in original Buddhism, there were arhats who were like saints, or, I mean, they achieved nirvana, right? They achieved the Buddhist goal of not being freed from rebirth. But the differentiation between them and a Buddha is a Buddha is also like liberated, but is an incredibly skillful teacher of others. So an arhat might be completely liberated unto themselves, but that doesn't mean they're not great at sharing it with other people. So I just think that's a interesting, like that recognition that this is that's a whole different deal. Phil.
So recently, I've been exploring delusion and self-view. Mm. So I'm learning a lot about recently some things that I thought were me, and that's how I am, and just being somewhat shocked that I didn't see that before, that and just that whole process of working with that and all the subtleties and nuances of who was that person like yesterday, and just that whole thing is it's just fascinating. So when you said edge, that's what came up, and I'm really enjoying working with it because it wasn't anything traumatic. Like, I've had those in the past, and I don't need an existential life crisis right now. So, but the learning is really, I'm really, really enjoying that. So, I'm curious any comments you have about delusion and self-view, and yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. What occurs to me is like I think that it really helps in Zen to be really fascinated by yourself, and not in the way that, you know, there's a way that could not be helpful, right? A more of an ego-based, like self-absorbed. Most of us, you know, are quite sufficiently self-absorbed in terms of our concerns and our perspectives and all of that, but really more of like that. I like what in Why Buddhism is True, how Robert Wright talks about it, but it's not exactly science. It's not exactly a scientific method that we use to study self. But let's see, who's our host? So it's not exactly, because the scientific method, right, is like a replicable experiment, and you know, you do it with a sample size and you prove something statistically and whatever. So it's not that we can do science, and yet there's a way that we can turn the light around and shine it on ourselves and try to hold that same kind of curiosity and objectivity, and it helps once we have healed somewhat from various kinds of trauma, and we have a certain level of self-acceptance, because otherwise it's kind of too painful to look at the self. So we have some healing to do first, but then when we can look at ourselves with just, that endless fascination, really, huh, isn't that interesting? That perspective shift, that motivation, that, I like my example lately, I think many people will relate to this, as I'm now 51, and I really more and more am sensing all of those habits and choices are starting to add up. You know, even ones that aren't all that big a deal, you know, in each instance, just it's almost like they've made a caricature of a human being with quirks and tendencies and views that just, I like, in some way, there's just feels like there's a lot of energy behind all of that, all of that habit energy, you know, whether it's as subtle as like going like this, okay, now I've got, you know, my wrinkles are developing right there, because that's like, that's my like, oh, that's my orientation toward life, right? What's going on? So this, you know, seeing my karma really start to take form is like, wow. You know, because it's kind of inevitable. I've been working on Zen since I was 25, and so for half my life, but I still, our view and experience is still so limited that it's difficult to live a fully clean, fresh, liberated life. But that's okay. You know, like I said, once there's a certain level of self-acceptance, it's just kind of fascinating. Just as if it was somebody else, right? Instead of like, oh no, what about me? Oh, me and my karma. It's like, huh, yeah, we all got it. Interesting. What's your issue? I can tell you what my issue is. Jinryu.
Thank you for calling on me, and I can be brief, but I think Benny and Cassie both are in front of me.
Oh, okay. I think, weird, because sometimes the hands stay in order and sometimes they don't. I think Cassie was first. Go ahead.
Oh, you want me to go ahead? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, if you're ready. Okay. I'll be short. What I'm really working on off the mat is this balance of freedom and control, and kind of what's the Buddhist perspective on that balance. And I know I'm a beginner, so I know a lot of people in this room are far more advanced than me and have a lot more knowledge, but I really enjoy just some of these basic things like the Eightfold Path and really taking a deeper dive, or the paramitas and real life examples, because I tend to not be an audio learner. Like, your podcast comes with me on like long hikes by myself and long trail runs and things like that. But I really enjoy these discussions and seeing how people's real life stories play into some of these very basic concepts that I'm still learning about. So that's what I would enjoy more of. And let's say my goal is to do some, like, I want to do like a longer session, like, want to do like 3 weeks. I want to go study for 3 weeks, but it's a big goal. So I'll dream big, but yeah, so that's it. Thank you.
Sweet. Yeah. I would recommend, if anybody ever has the wherewithal to go stay at a monastery or, you know, community for 3 weeks, 3-4 weeks, and do what they usually call like a practice period. That is just, that's just an awesome experience to just, you know, cause we, most of us have the opportunity to take some kind of break or vacation, but a lot of times we fill that up with, like, you know, we spend time with family and we have obligations, or we're distracting ourselves, or I don't know, it's full of stuff. And it's not really a vacation for the mind. So that's what I think of as for retreat, and then for session, which is longer, and then if longer, like, to really just, you know, set all that stuff down. And so there's a way that then we can settle into our zazen and our mindfulness in a way that just, it's very difficult if we have to keep juggling all of our daily activities and routines and stuff like that. We can set it down, but it's still part of us that's still going. And then, you know, hopefully it's still snowing. But when I get out to Rohatsu, you know, I've taken every care of everything for the week. Other people are taking care of Bright Way. I have like no excuse to think about anything. But yeah, other people are taking care of my dogs. My husband has all the food he needs in the fridge. Like, I'm good. So then I can really just set aside all of that. I mean, I don't. I still sit and plan stuff and think about stuff. But the invitation is, it's easier to settle into that. But yeah, the whole the question of, how did you phrase it? Control versus...
like freedom and control.
That's a nice way to phrase it. You know, we don't do formal koans in Soto Zen. We have koans in our teaching materials and what have you, but we don't, you know, dwell on them a lot. That's why I don't, you know, give Dharma talks on them. And then, you know, you come to meet with me and give me the answer and I pass you or not or whatever. That's a whole like formal system in Rinzai Zen. I believe that within their koan systems, they have different kinds of koans. So then there are koans which are like breakthrough koans, where like essentially you're just like, what? Like Buddha nature, emptiness, what? And then these koans are meant to like, you know, get you to kind of break through to a new perspective or let go of some of your central views. But then there's like koans that once you've kind of seen some of that, then deepening it, and there are koans of expression, can you express it? And then there's koans of, and I don't know what they're called because I'm not part of that system, but I guess I would call them like koans of maybe function or manifestation. You know, how do we embody this in the world moment by moment? How do we take what might be kind of an insight or an aspiration that is, I mean, it's not, it feels like it's not just intellectual, but it feels kind of internal, and we don't know how to manifest that, or we find ourselves not manifesting it, right? We have some sense of like, we have a deep conviction that we're all connected, and yet then we lose it in traffic, right? You know, it's, so in general, that those are like understood to be the later most advanced koans, in the sense that that is the most challenging thing. So like I was saying about the skillful means in terms of teaching others, or how do we function in the world? But I think there is something really, really fascinating when we start to explore this, because, you know, I call it the executive eye, our sense of executive eye is something that we rely on a lot. And we think that there's someone in charge up there, and they are very busy and they are full of opinions and they're bossy and, but also frustrated, right? Because nobody's listening to them. I'm supposed to be the ruler here, but nobody's listening to me. And when we recognize that that is like, that's not really how we work. That's that we have an illusion of this executive eye, but that's not how we work. So that opens the question, well, how do we work? How do we make our decisions? Who does guide our practice? Who is behind this response? And for me lately, it's been, and this is, I would say, this is the edge of my practice, and I call it learning to trust the real person. And the real person, I feel like, is very, has a lot to do with the body, but it's not dividing body and mind, right? So it feels like an inhabited body. And when I took Aikido, we called this coordinating mind and body. So instead of, you know, it's like the body's automatically doing something, the mind's thinking of something else, or the mind is like, all right, let's do this. But somehow they can kind of coordinate together. And then our responses and our attitude are just, they just work so much better. And with less of that angst and stress that we give ourselves with that executive eye. So I think it's just it's a fascinating journey. Benny.
thank you. Yeah, for me, the Zen practice and life in common, so basically everything I'm doing, it's especially in the last months and maybe last year, feels very good, you know, like very in a healthy way, so that I'm really like craving for less things. I'm not suffering so much under expectations that are not met by whatever external stuff that is going on, you know, like it's really nice. And for me, it feels my life or what I'm, my actions are feeling much more like flowing with whatever happens. And I'm really thankful and grateful for this. And somehow, like the executive eye, it feels like the all the practice I'm doing, like studying, reading books, talking to people, like to you now. It feels more and more like feeding my mind, or like feeding my this executive eye. I like this way to say it. You know, like feeding this part, whatever, feeding it so that it is calm and that there is more room for like something like natural spontaneity that is just more loose, more free, and more flowing, like these concepts. You know what I mean? I'm trying, it's a little bit difficult to explain, but you know, like all the Zen stuff, I love it. I feel very connected to it, but in the end, they are concepts, right? Like in the Heart Sutra and everywhere, it's one of my favorite things about Buddhism in general, that it's saying, you know, like, oh, it's, we are doing so many cool things and it's super nice, but you know, like in the end, sorry, it is. And what I'm trying to say is, for me, everything feels more natural and flowing, like I'm perceiving the world and me in it or whatever. But yeah, it's kind of sometimes weird, you know, like these concepts, this talking and expressing myself to others and explaining like I'm doing right now. But then on the other side, there's just this natural flow where all these concepts doesn't matter. And sometimes it feels like weird to me. This is my edge, I would say. when it makes sense to anybody, thank you.
Thank you. That doesn't sound like a, I mean, what makes it an edge? You say like it's confusing, but you know, I mean, who cares? That sounds great.
Yeah, in a way, I don't know if it's an edge, to be honest. You know, like it feels like, I don't know. It's a transition or whatever. It's hard to, I don't have a word for this one.
Yeah.
It's not suffering in an edgy suffering way. Suffering edgy way. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah. This is not, you know, like it's.
Well, and what you're talking about does make me think though about the different rhythms of practice. And so sometimes an edge can be very obvious. Sometimes an edge can be painfully obvious, right? Life circumstances or health or loss or who knows what is bringing something up just front and center. And then at other times we have to kind of search for our edge in order to keep ourselves a little motivated. You know, like, this is kind of what I know. So like, where is that? You know, where is the point of maybe discomfort or limitation or inhibition or whatever? And then what's that about? But then sometimes there's like nice times when, you know, we're almost like just getting used to new territory, that we've learned something, our perspective has changed. and we just get to kind of enjoy becoming more familiar with it. And then the edge isn't really necessarily first and foremost. So, Jinryu.
So I answered all the questions, I think, but I'm only going to talk here about 1 and 4 very quickly. So the edge of my practice is that I am fortunate enough from time to time to get to a place in my meditation where I can really feel and almost see the lack of boundary between me and the chair and the other chair in front of me and my cat, and sometimes even the tree outside my door and the plane going overhead. And I will focus on my breath, and then a little very, very, very tiny voice will say, "Keep this going." And it's gone. So that's the edge of my practice. And then as far as aspiration, and I have been thinking about this aspiration a lot lately, over the past, say, 2 weeks, I would like to live at the intersection of compassion and detachment.
That's a good one. Inspiring. Did you have something more, John?
Oh, all I was going to say is, I mean, Benny was talking about an edge that I guess I have, and I think other people have, which is you study Zen, you get certain notions in your head, but you can't express them in a clear way, right? Because it's part of incorporating your Zen and your Zen teachings and your insights into your normal life is to be able to express them and explain them. And so I just thought that was part of what he was trying to say. So that certainly adds to my own.
Speak a little bit on something that Jinryu's sharing reminded me of was like this is a koan, I guess, in the Soto sense, which is it's an obstacle, it's kind of a limitation obstacle that we encounter, you know, past which we don't understand, or we can't really see, or we can't really function the way that we want to. And then, but it's not something that can be solved like a math problem, right? It's not like, oh, well, here's what you need to do. Like we have to live the answer, and we have to live it for ourselves. No, somebody else living it does us, you know, nothing for us. We have to engage with this obstacle ourselves. And there's that, the effort in our zazen, or lack thereof, the letting go that we are trying to do in our zazen, and inevitably letting go of our, I wouldn't even say letting go of our self-view, but letting go of our attachment to our self-view, because the self-view is just, that's a phenomenon of our brain, and we're never going, and if we did get free of it somehow, we wouldn't be able to function in the world, right? So it's just this phenomenon in our brains that we have a sense of, like, yeah, here I am. So we can't, it's not that we get rid of that, but we get rid of our close attachment or we momentarily learn how to not be so attached to it, right? Because ordinarily we're just like, oh my, you know, I've got to hold that together because that's the only thing keeping me going. And then when we sit and we're just practicing relaxing that sense of self, of agenda, of executive I being in control, and we're really just opening up to what is. And so that is a, you know, part of our Zazen. We may need to do Zazen for many, many years before we have a taste of that. But I do note that, because some folks with very busy minds, that it's hard to even get there. But it only takes like just a snippet, just a second of feeling more spacious or feeling more boundless to have us learn that this is a real thing, right? That we can get in the trap of trying to recreate and make that happen again, and yet that, like, I swear, my Zazen for many, 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 many years was like just like falling asleep or like busy planning stuff. And yet, you know, just had a few experiences of just something other than that. And they just kept me going for years. They kept me sitting retreats 8 hours a day for 7 days just to get that, just to taste that again. So, like, you know, a little goes a long way, really, in our experience, you know. So that, but then there is that, it can get more and more subtle, right? Because then you're sitting there and you're letting go. And then as soon as there's that sense of like, oh yeah, I'm doing it, or this must be what the ancestors meant. Like as soon as there's a, it just, it's still, it's quieter. It's not as, that sense of self is not as overpowering. Like, oh my God, I, you know, my life is miserable, or I need to achieve this thing or whatever. And it's very loud and obnoxious. But this gets very, very subtle. It's very quiet and spacious, but there's just still a little like, yeah, still a little, because naturally, like, this is what Dogen says in Genjo Koan, which we were studying on Tuesdays, like, what, I can't remember exactly how he puts it, but what you have attained is not necessarily registered by your discriminating mind. But our discriminating mind wants to, right? We're like, I want to feel at one with the universe. But then kind of by definition, that doesn't work. I want to have that experience. I want to feel intimate. I want to feel non-separate. I want to have that great meditation experience. And so there's just that little, I don't know. It can be so frustrating. I've been so still during meditation retreats before, and just like, that little self just keeps chasing the surrender away. But I don't know, there's always more letting go to do, you know. It gets more and more subtle. But now that sense, like we were talking earlier about that sense of control, of trusting the body, trusting a, I don't know. For me right now, that's what it feels like. The word that's coming up is trust. It's like, I don't have to drive this process or even be aware of this process per se. I can just trust in all of this. Well, hopefully you found that discussion interesting. Would love to have heard from everybody, but I will say the closing verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Jamio, and have Thank a wonderful you, week.
Thank you. Whenever it begins. Thank you.